Big Little Bestie, welcome back to After Bedtime with Big Little Feelings, your safe space at the end of a long, hard day of parenting, or maybe you're listening to this midday parenting. Today's episode is one that you're not going to want to miss. We have the world's leading brain health expert on the show, Dr. Amen. He is on a mission to revolutionize brain health and eradicate mental health disorders. If that sounds kind of big and crazy, well, it's because it is. This episode is one of the most impactful episodes we have done to date. You will gain so much from this interview, not only for your child, because I know that's why you're here. We all love our kids so much. So we're voraciously reading and eating up all of the parenting advice because we just don't want to mess this up. So yes, you are going to learn how to create the healthiest brain for your child, how to instill the best practices so that your child grows up with the strongest mental health possible. And you're also going to be able to do this for yourself. I am so excited for you, Big Little Bestie. You are going to walk away feeling amazing after this episode.
If you follow us on Instagram, you know that Moki, my pug, he is my number one baby. He's my firstborn. I love him so much. But if I'm being really, really honest, ever since having kids, he doesn't get the attention that he used to. I do my best, but there's a lot going on. But one thing that makes me feel really good is we recently switched his food to the farmer's dog. And I cannot tell you how happy this little pug is every morning and every night when he's about to eat. Even my husband commented yesterday, he's like, I've never seen Moki prance around so excited. He loves this food. And I've noticed a difference where he does look happier, he has more energy, he just looks like a healthier dog. The farmer's dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food. It's recommended by vets, nutritionally balanced, and it's made from human-grade ingredients in safe, clean kitchens. Honestly, when you pour it, you can tell how real and how clean this food is. In hindsight now, I can really see how like traditional dry and wet dog food options are extremely processed and they can use so much lower quality ingredients than they claim to, and they're extremely difficult to portion accurately. And if you're using dry food or like store-bought food, no guilt. I did it for a really long time, but I now notice such a difference since I've switched him. Which is why I'm here sharing the farmer's dog with you so you can incorporate it into your family. And one little detail that I love, it makes life easier, is the farmer's dog isn't just higher quality food. They also send you the right pre-portioned size specifically for your dog based on their unique nutritional needs. This makes it really easy to help your dog reach and stay at their ideal weight, which is one of the biggest indicators of a full, healthy life. In fact, dogs at healthy weights can live as much as 16% longer than overweight ones, and that's 2.5 years. A fresh diet has been found to have all sorts of benefits from healthier coat and skin to better breath and even easier digestion and smaller, better poops. Yes, poops matter. A healthy diet isn't just important for humans. Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/feelings. Let the farmer's dog know that we sent you. Use our code or click podcast after you sign up for your first box.
Do you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or needs help with homework? Is your child ahead and not getting challenged enough in class? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language, arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way with positive feedback. I love the fun nature of the learning program, so it feels like it's not work. It feels like it's actually something fun for the kids to do. This program will improve your kids' grades. It's backed by research. Kids using IXL are scoring higher on tests. Studies show that kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. It really will work for any of your kids. One subscription gets you everything, so it's one site for all kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. If your child is struggling, this is the smartest investment you can make. A single hour of tutoring costs more than a month of IXL. One in four students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Big Little Feelings listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/feelings. Visit IXL.com/feelings to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Okay, besties, we are truly in awe that we get to hang with the Dr. Daniel Amen today. This is a dream come true for Chris and I. We will dive into that shortly, but Dr. Amen is on a bold mission to end mental illness by creating a revolution in brain health. So he scanned over 250,000 brains, everyone from celebs like Miley Cyrus and Justin Bieber, to murderers, to pro athletes. On top of being a 12-time New York Times bestselling author, including books like Change Your Brain, Change Your Life, and his new book coming out this week, actually, Raising Mentally Strong Kids, he's also the founder of Amen Clinics, 11 clinics across the U.S. that empower patients to understand their brain and create a unique plan for optimal brain health with the world's largest database of brain scans for psychiatry. Dr. Amen, welcome to After Bedtime. We are thrilled to be here with you.
Thank you so much.
Yay. I know, this is great.
This is great. The parents, we need help. We need help. We need help with ourselves and we need help with our kids, you know, and brain health is something that I think is kind of missing from the equation when we're talking about good behavior, when we're talking about not messing our kids up, which is probably the number one thing that everybody is always worried about. So we're really, really excited to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
So I want to first ask about this sort of like obsession that you have with brains. Because it's different, I think, than anything we all think of when we think of mental health, when we think of psychiatry. We just kind of think of the disorder, the diagnosis, some medication. Talk to me about where this, the scan and the obsession with the brain came from.
So when I was 18, Vietnam was still going on, and I became an infantry medic, or my love of medicine was born. But about a year into it, I realized I didn't like being shot at. It was like, okay, this is not my thing. And some people like it. And I got myself retrained as an X-ray technician and developed a passion for medical imaging, as our professors used to say. How do you know unless you look? And that really stuck with me. And then fast forward 6 years to 1979. I'm a second year medical student. I just get married to my childhood sweetheart, who took a break from me, married somebody else, and she has a two-year-old. And I love this two-year-old, who I end up adopting. 2 months into our new marriage, she tries to kill herself. And I'm horrified. And I have no idea. I've never lived with someone that had a serious mental health issue. And I took her to see a wonderful psychiatrist. And I came to realize if he helped her, which he did, it wouldn't just help her. It helped me. Help our child. Even help our grandchildren as they would be shaped by someone who was happier and more stable. Fell in love with psychiatry 45 years ago. Loved it every day since. But it's the only medical specialty that never looks at the organ it treats. And I knew it was wrong. I hated the term mental illness. Even back in 1979, it's shaming. It's demeaning. Call someone mental. Well, that's not a good thing. Call them a brain. You elevate them. And I knew back then, I was the top neuroscience student in medical school. I knew these were brain health issues. And so I would agitate my professors. It's like, why aren't you looking at the brain? And then I had this anchor moment that I actually don't even think I told my team this. I had this anchor moment when I'm a fourth year medical student and a baby on the unit was cognitively impaired. We could just tell he was cognitively impaired. And I'm like, why aren't you going to scan him? I told my attending neurologist, you should scan him. And he's like, I'm going to teach you not to waste money on tests you don't need. And I'm like, how do you know what's going on because you didn't look? And anyways, he's going to teach me a lesson. And that night, that baby had a stroke because that baby had a tumor in one of the ventricles of his brain. And the doctor actually taught me the opposite. How do you know unless you look?
Right.
And then fast forward to 1991, I'm a double board certified psychiatrist. I'm board certified in general psychiatry and child and adolescent psychiatry. I'm the director of a dual diagnosis unit. That's a psychiatric hospital unit that takes care of drug addicts. And I went to a lecture on brain SPECT imaging. Rocked my world. Everything in my world changes at that moment because, okay, I look at the brains. It gives me more information. And so you realize things like depression are like chest pain. It's like, stop giving people the diagnosis of depression because doctors don't give people the diagnosis of chest pain. Because it doesn't tell you what causes it, and it doesn't tell you what to do for it. And I realize depression's the same thing. There are many different causes, and giving everybody an SSRI is insanity. Yet that still goes on. And then I'm going, oh, healthy brain, healthy life. And when you think of children, because I'm a child psychiatrist, get their brains healthy, their behavior's better. But I think of it sort of like hardware and software, get their brain right, and then never give in to a tantrum, right? If you give in to a tantrum, you've just taught the child they can flip out and you'll give them their way. So the rule in my house is if you have a tantrum or an anxiety attack, to get your way, the answer is no. It's always going to be no. Go ahead, have a tantrum. And so I didn't have very many tantrums in my house. And I was always, and this is another thing to be with your children, curious, not furious. Mm. And so I'm like, well, that's really interesting behavior. You know I'm not giving in, but have at it. So think of it like hardware and software. But of all the parenting books and parenting teachers you probably ever interviewed, nobody's talking about the physical functioning of their brain. You know, how are they sleeping? What are they eating? Have they perhaps had a concussion and that's why they're acting the way they did? And so in Raising Mentally Strong Kids, which I wrote with Charles Fay, who I just dearly love, he's the president of the Love and Logic Institute, we mix neuroscience with love and logic.
And so you mentioned creating a healthy brain in children, and I think we want to get there. Because I do think everybody sitting at this table kind of agrees that before you get there, we're all so transfixed on our children, our children, our children. How do I make them better? How do I stop tantrums? How do I do this? And I think we all agree it starts actually with the parent and the parent's brain health. And can we kind of start there in terms of what is the number one thing you would tell a parent to do to raise a mentally strong child just within themselves first?
You then we'll get to be mentally the child. Strong, right? If you're not mentally strong, if you don't model the message, you suck as a messenger. I mean, I don't know how else to say that, but you know, we're a brain health organization. If I didn't model brain health, I would sort of suck as a messenger. So what is mental strength? It's knowing what you want, being able to act consistently to get what you want. It's definition, action, and then managing your mind. And all of us have crazy thoughts. I mean, we just like put it out there. All of us have weird, crazy, stupid, sexual, violent thoughts that nobody should ever hear. The brain is a sneaky organ. And if you can gain psychological distance from the noise, you're going to be much more mentally strong. One of the strategies I talk about in my work is give your mind a name. Because when you give your mind a name, you gain psychological distance from the chatter, from the noise. Too often, people believe what they think. And I was 28 years old in my psychiatric residency at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center when one of the professors said, you have to teach your patients not to believe every stupid thing they think. And I'm like, I believe every stupid thing I think, right? Whether it's being jealous or being fearful, predicting the worst or blaming other people for what's happening in my life. And I'm like, oh, I don't have to do that. I coined the term ants many years ago. Use it with kids all the time. Automatic negative thoughts. That if you're depressed, you're probably infested. You have way too many negative thoughts that you believe. And as I teach my patients, it's not the thoughts you have that make you suffer. It's the thoughts you attach to that make you suffer. So the exercise is whenever you're feeling sad, mad, nervous, or out of control, write down what you're thinking. And then just ask yourself whether or not it's true. We have 9 different types of ants, or 9 different ways we distort things to make them out to be worse than they really are, like fortune telling or mind reading, guilt beating, labeling, blame, all or nothing thinking, focusing on the negative. And so write it down. My wife never listens to me. God, that lot. That's all or nothing thinking. Whenever you use words like always, never, everyone, every time, it's almost always wrong, right? My wife never listens to me, all or nothing thinking. Is that true? And I'm like, no, I've written 19 national public television scripts. My share of shows have aired like 160,000 times across North America. She's listened to everyone. Now, maybe not 7 times, but she's... So it's just the lies my brain generates. And it's like, well, where do they come from? And your thoughts may not even be your thoughts, right? That oh, yeah. If you have trauma, if your mom or dad or grandma or grandpa had trauma, that actually changed their genes. You probably heard this term, epigenetics, mm-hmm. That what happens in the generations before you changed their genes, which means changed their eggs and their sperm. And you may have anxious thoughts that have nothing to do with you. That my grandfather, when he was 19 years old, his brother got a car from his sister, and he didn't know how to drive in California, and got killed by a train. And my grandfather was so traumatized by that, so angry, that if I have anxiety, it may not be mine, it may be his.
My mind was blown when I first learned about epigenetics. I'm like, you're saying that my grandmother, who was a highly traumatized, anxious person, she went through so much, like, that impacted me now. And it's just wild to realize that.
And so you're saying the way to reprogram that, one easy way, I would say one of the easiest ways, is what you just mentioned, even just naming it. And then, of course, probably the myriad of other things you would recommend, therapies. But even the act, especially in parenting, I love this example, because how many times are we just triggered out of our minds? And the thought comes in, I'm the worst mom on earth. How are you going to show up as a parent? You're just kind of perpetuating the cycle. Now you're going to show up as the worst mom on earth. My kid is out of control. And going through that exercise, is this true? Is like, okay, wait, stop. Is my kid out of control, or are they having a hard time? And then you just kind of keep going with that. What a game changer in the moment of parenting.
Well, and that is such a common thought. I'm the worst mom, or yeah. I'm the worst dad. And nobody questions it. So if you don't question your thoughts, you believe them. And then you act as if they're true. I'm the worst mom, which then means the guilt causes you to not be firm. Mm-hmm. And there's this vicious cycle of you overreact. Yeah. I'm the worst mom. You then let them get away with bad behavior, and then you let them get away with bad behavior, and then you let them get away with bad behavior, and then the tension has built up so much, exploding him. And then you let them get away with bad behavior, and then you, so it's this cycle of guilt that perpetuates difficult behavior. And it's like you explode, probably shouldn't have done that, not the most helpful thing. All of us have done it, right? I'm not telling you, I have six, and I'm way better now than I used to be. But the idea, if you break that guilt cycle, but even if you explode, though, you still can't act like that. And if you act like that, there are consequences. Can I just sort of go through the process that I've created in my head? Step number one, got to know what you want. What kind of parent do you want to be? I want to be firm. I want to be kind. And I want to be present, right? My dad was gone all the time. We were not bonded, right? 1972 was the first time I could vote. He tells me if I vote for Senator McGovern, the country's going to go to hell. And I voted for Senator McGovern because we had no relationship. Country did go to hell, but it was because Richard Nixon and Watergate, right? But you have no influence without connection. So I want to be present. I want to be firm. I want to be kind. I want to be a good parent. What kind of child do I want to raise? I want to raise kids that are independent, that are responsible, that are competent, that feel good about themselves. I do not want to raise entitled children. I want them to be competent. I even think after the age of five, it's good to do that with kids. What do you want? What do you want in your relationships? What do you want at school? What do you want for your money? What do you want for your physical, emotional, spiritual health? Mm-hmm. Like, why are you on the planet? What do you want? And then when they act up, it's like your behavior getting you what you want. Second part is bonding, right? You have no influence without connection. And we are the least bonded that we have been centuries. Why? Cell phones. And we have three generations now of tired women because here in California, 90% of moms work outside the house as well. So they're primary caretakers for children. So they are the primary caretakers of children. Both of you know this because you have children. They're primary caretakers for the house. And they're working often full time outside of the house. So how do you put all of that together without being a bit worn out?
This is something we've talked a lot about on this podcast.
Amen.
So.
But, you know, one part, if I may also, because I think some people listening might feel instantly guilty. I might argue that by the time the next generation comes, the male partner, if we're talking about hetero, the male partner is still lacking sort of right now in our present generation. I think the statistic is even if the woman is the primary breadwinner, she's doing 90% of the household tasks, which is kind of exactly what you're saying. So she is completely burnt out. Maybe by the time we keep going and we get a 50-50, maybe mom's not so burnt out. Maybe both parents are kind of equal.
There are ways around.
Yeah.
Because relationships require two things. Time. Actual physical time and a willingness to listen.
What is the one thing, if we had to let everything go, because again, there's so much on social media and our generation is obsessed with our kids and getting it just right and do it this way, but don't do it that way and feed them this way. And just if you were to break it down and just say, okay, let everything else go and do one thing with your child to ensure their mental health and their brain development later on, what would the one thing be?
20 minutes a day, do something with your child wants to do. And during that time, no commands, no questions, no direction. So even if you're working full time, and I want you to get the kids to help with the housework, right? You want to make them feel competent. Kids who work have much better self-esteem as adults as far as kids who everything is taken care of for them. And it's like, oh, but I have to teach them. It's like, yeah, when you have any employee, what you actually should do is overteach them and micromanage them initially so they're doing what you want them to do. And it's like, oh, well, I have to. Oh, I don't want to fuss with them. Well, then you're going to end up really fussing with them when they're teenagers, right? So the more you can get them to be helpful, It's an investment that'll pay off. And so people go, oh, I'm not spending hours and hours a day with them. You totally don't need to do that, right? I mean, I'm one of seven. If I had gotten 20 minutes a day with my mother, that would have been heaven.
That's terrible.
I think it was like 20 minutes a month at mine. And I'd sit on the couch and read to her. And I still remember that as such an emotionally positive moment.
Even just that little bit of time, it can go so far. This is something we talk about, too. We've got the 10-minute miracle, and it's such a game changer when you really give that daily. It's small time to them.
It doesn't have to be a lot.
Yeah.
But it's theirs, and they connect. And don't talk that much during the time. Mm. This is, females have language on both sides of their brain. Males, mostly just the left side.
This makes a lot of sense. We want to talk.
The more you talk, the less they're going to behave.
Yeah.
And you hear this probably a lot, that they don't listen to me, but they listen to their dad because their dad uses fewer words and he's often more serious. So, and lives generally with less guilt because females, I published a study on 46,000 scans looking at the difference between male and female brains. And it's sort of like we're not the same species.
Tell us more. What did they say more here?
Yeah. Limbic brain is bigger, which is where bonding occurs, but also puts you at greater risk for anxiety, depression, and guilt.
So we biologically are more hardwired for guilt. If we do the same sort of...
That is fascinating.
This makes sense.
We will do the same thing our husbands will do, and he'll be like, I don't feel bad about that. What do you mean? We're just going to dinner, you know? And
right. I literally got into it with my husband the other day. I was like, so you're saying when you go on a work trip, you don't feel guilty. You don't feel bad about the kids, like, you not being there. And he's like, not even a little bit. I was like, that is mind-blowing. I battle that every time we're going to go on a trip.
Every time, biology.
Yeah.
Okay, so connection. What I really want to harp on and focus in on is this concept of connection, because it's just amazing that the expert on brain health, not only in kids, but in adults, is saying... Do one thing, have connection and
attachment.
Listener, the connection does not have to be hours and 20 hours and give up your job and give up your dreams. You can have both. You can give 20 minutes of special connection. Don't talk. Don't lead the show. Let your child lead the show. And you'll foster a healthy brain and better behavior, too, in the moment.
Absolutely. Because it's harder for them to act out if they're connected to you. So clarity, that's the first step. Bonding, time, and active listening. So I teach people, it's what therapists do. Like if they say something, repeat it back and shut up. Repeat it back and then just listen for the feelings behind what they say. I want to have blue hair. If I would have said that, my dad would have flipped out and said, you're not going to have blue hair as long as you live in this house. And I'm like, oh, you don't have blue hair. And he might go, sometimes I feel like I don't fit in. Or they're all wearing it that way. And it's like, oh, you want to be like the other kids. Or you feel like you don't fit in. And then just be quiet. Mm-hmm. Parents, you know, it's like, oh, I want to download all the things I've learned into your little brain. Don't do that. Listen, right? They're going to be watching you all the time and they'll download your values and your experiences. But when you're interacting with them, just feedback. What you hear, and they get so close to you when you do that, right? How many of us, even as adults, have people who actually listen to us?
It feels amazing, validating what you're saying. Just have to agree. And I also want to clarify, I think this makes a lot of sense for older kids, but the disconnect is with younger kids. People are like, well, they're ridiculous. What do you mean? And I think what you're saying is, even if the kid is saying, this crayon is too purpley, you can hear that. This crayon feels really purpley to you. Are you going to give them what they want? Are you going to give them the extra screen time? Are you going to? No. But you can repeat back, hey, you really want more screen time. I hear that.
Yeah.
You can just repeat it back. You can hear them.
The Academy of Pediatrics recommends no screen time for children under three. I think families should have rules.
Yes.
Society has rules, like tell the truth. Of course, if you say tell the truth, you have to tell the truth. Somebody calls, don't go tell them I'm not here, right? I mean, that's modeling. One of my favorite rules is do what mom and dad say the first time. Because if it's the expectation, then when they don't, there can be a consequence. And that became a rule when I read this research, that parents who tell children to do something more than five times, their chance of abusing that child goes way up because you're angry at the disrespect, right? The second time, it's like, oh, you have a choice. You can do it now, or here's this consequence. I don't really care. It's up to you.
And so our demographic is mostly toddler parents. And so what this means, especially at that age, is the parent has to mean what they say. Maybe the kid is 2, 3 years old. They can't clean up their toys. They can't get the shoes on and out the door. That means what you're saying is physically swoop in and put their shoes on then. Ask them one time. You know, we're not repeating over
not
and over.
Begging,
please get your shoes on. Please get your shoes on. Please get your shoes on. The kid has to do it the first time. But at the toddler age, you got to step in and show them, hey, the first time we say it, we're leaving the park. It's up to us to get them out of the park.
I might have to do it generally a couple of times.
Yeah.
And what you just mentioned, too, I feel like it really comes into play with us as parents, too. Like, so many of us, you know, there's so many different things that from our experiences growing up, our childhoods, the way our parents reacted to us, that have now wired our brains, and we're parenting from these brains. Like, what would you say is maybe the number one hack or like tool or something that parents should know about optimizing their brain health?
Well, you know, it turns out that it's this question. I actually worked with BJ Fogg from Stanford for 6 months on creating tiny habits. He runs the Persuasive Tech Lab at Stanford and wrote a book called Tiny Habits. You know, it's the smallest thing I can do today that will make the biggest difference. So we have 50 of them for the brain, but the mother of all of them is just this one question. When you go to do something today, is this good for my brain? Bad for it? And if you can answer that with information and love, love of yourself, love of your children, you're just going to make better decisions. And quite frankly, most seven-year-olds know if it's good for your brain or bad for it. I went, when Chloe was seven, we went to her classroom and I gave a lecture and I wrote 20 things on the board. And I'm like, separate these for me. Good for your brain, bad for your brain. And they got 19 out of the 20.
Wow. Right?
The only thing they missed was orange juice, which they put in the good category, which has way too much sugar. They want an orange? Great. Give them the orange. But when you just give them pure sugar with a little bit of vitamin C, it's not good for her.
Totally.
Let's dive into one of my favorite finds from the last year, Quince. Okay, a friend introduced me to Quince. And this friend, I very much trust. She has amazing style. I really look up to her. She was like, you have to try Quince. It has changed my closet. And as someone who doesn't always know where to start with clothes, and I look at my closet all the time, I'm like, I don't want to wear any of this. I was like, you know what? I'm down. And thank goodness I did. Quince has literally transformed my entire closet and made it so easy to feel cute, to feel fashionable, up to date, while also not breaking the bank. So Quince has a whole range of high quality items, but at a really amazing price point, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50. They also have organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and even 14 karat gold jewelry. So you get these amazing items, but they're all at a super low price. But they're all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands because Quince partners directly with the top factories. So they totally cut out the cost of that middleman and they pass the savings down on to us. So I pretty much have Quince rotating now through my outfits. I have crop tops from them for working out. I have workout clothes from them. I have cashmere sweaters that I wear all the time to work, to interviews. They're pieces that I just genuinely love. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/feelings for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/feelings to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/feelings. Okay, so recently my husband and I wanted to go to this concert. One of our favorite bands was coming into town in Colorado, playing at Red Rocks, and we were like, okay, we need to somehow get our hands on those tickets. We set an alarm to our phone. We put it in our calendars. The amount of effort that we went through to get these tickets was a little bit extreme. And here's the thing. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. And it's just like if you're hiring for your business. You want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/feelings. Because here's the thing, ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post that job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/feelings. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/feelings. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
For the listener, could you quickly summarize the top things that are kind of quote unquote bad for our brain or destroying our mental health? When I learned this, it blew my mind. Yeah, I did not associate the things with our brain health.
Mnemonic I like a lot called Bright Minds. You want to keep your brain healthy or rescue it, you have to prevent or treat these 11 major risk factors. And in it, okay, this is a problem, and this is something to do. So Bright Minds, the B is for blood flow. Low blood flow is the number one brain imaging predictor of Alzheimer's disease. It's associated with depression, ADHD, schizophrenia, traumatic brain injury, everything. So how do you know you have low blood flow in your brain? Caffeine. Caffeine is not good for you.
Everyone listening to this.
Nicotine. And we have a vaping epidemic.
Yeah.
Marijuana, alcohol. I mean, talk about alcohol, but you know, some people use it as mommy's little helper and it's mommy's little destroyer. Not exercising, having high blood pressure, not being serious about it, or being sedentary. And so the opposite of that is exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Walk like you're late for 45 minutes, 4 times a week. It's shown to be equally effective to Zoloft, a really good antidepressant. But with Zoloft, you get sexual side effects. With exercise, it enhances your sexuality. So exercise. And ginkgo, the supplement ginkgo, from food standpoint, beets, oregano, cinnamon, cayenne pepper, all of those things increase blood flow. Well, that's not hard. The R is retirement and aging. When you stop learning, your brain starts dying. And so sometimes mothers who are just at home feel like, my brain is going to mush because I'm just with a tiny one all day long. And so trying to get into a new hobby or learn something new in the process to just keep your brain growing. High iron levels prematurely age the brain. Low iron levels, you can't sleep, you're anxious, and you have ADD. So getting some of your basic numbers checked, like ferritin, which is a measure of iron storage, is really important. I is for inflammation. So what increases inflammation, which we think is a root for many mental illnesses, having low levels of omega-3 fatty acids. So I think everybody should be taking an omega-3 fatty acid supplement. If your microbiome is not healthy, you're likely have inflammation in your body and a lot of pain. And the one thing people don't think about is gum disease. If your gums aren't healthy, your brain's not healthy. Your gut's not healthy. Your heart's not healthy. So become a flossing fool. And my gums were awful because my grandfather is a candy maker and my mother loved candy. So I had a lot of candy, but I also had a lot of cavities and not, you know, being 1 of 7, I don't think we took care of our teeth the way we should have, could have. And so now I'm a flossing fool. Be really good at teaching your kids to love their mouth and care for their mouth. The G is genetics, but I don't think we think about genetics properly. It's like, oh, I've got diabetes because it runs in my family, or I drink too much because it runs in my family.
Like, as if it's just fixed and predestined. Like, that's what it is.
Right.
Nothing
as
I can do.
As opposed to, I have obesity and heart disease in my family, but I'm not overweight and I don't have heart disease. Because I'm on an obesity heart disease prevention program every day of my life. I adopted three of my kids, and all three come from serious addictions on both sides of their family. And I hammer them, Jemmy, lovingly. You're predisposed to have this problem. If you never drink, if you never do drugs, you're not going to have a problem. But if you do, there is potential disaster. You need to be on an addiction prevention program every day of your life. I mean, that's why these children are living with me, right? I could adopt them because someone else was not being responsible, right? They gave in to their genetic vulnerability. The H is head trauma. Mild traumatic brain injury. If you go, hey, Daniel, what's the single most important thing you've learned from 250,000 scans? Mild traumatic brain injury ruins people's lives and nobody knows about it because psychiatrists don't look at the brain. Psychologists don't look at the brain. They make diagnoses based on symptom clusters with no biological data. And that's insane. So your brain is soft, about the consistency of soft butter. Your skull is really hard and has sharp bony ridges. Do not let children hit soccer balls with their head. Do not let them play tackle football. I am not a fan of brain damage. And every study on the impact of soccer on the brain is bad. Every study on the impact of tackle football on the brain is bad. And people go, but what about the teamwork? Teamwork is awesome. They can do it in something else. I think protected. Play a racket sport. Did you know people who play racket sports live longer?
Read that
than
in your
everywhere.
Book. That.
You know, all other people.
Pickleball included. A smaller court. We could do pickleball.
Pickleball.
And we're going to live longer. It will be.
So,
see, if Jack was Google's tennis, I love that.
Tennis.
You know, I think we're all, our generation is really amazing because I think we're all very focused on our child's well-being, especially our children's mental well-being. I don't know that the same was true for our generation and our parents. So that's something that's unique, but I do think brain health, again, is a little bit missing in terms of we're so worried about disciplining in the right way and all this, but also wear a helmet. Also
always
protects their brain health in general.
Your brain controls everything you do. How you think, how you feel, how you act. Your brain creates love, it creates learning, it creates happiness, and it creates sadness. And when your brain works right, you work right. And when your brain is troubled, for whatever reason, you're sadder, you're sicker, you're poorer, nothing works. So the first thing is not don't do drugs. The first thing is get them to fall in love with their brain. And it's a term I call brain envy. I always say Freud was wrong. Penis envy is not the cause of anybody's problem. It's the brain. Get them to love and care for their brain so they're like, oh, no, I'm not hitting a soccer ball with my head because I love myself.
And how do you foster that self-worth in a child?
Well, you just get them to love their brain. That's the first thing. And then you teach them not to believe every stupid thing they think. And they can learn as young as four. And so I remember a time when my daughter was 4 years old. She's in the bathroom with Tana, my wife. And she goes, I want you to have my ears pierced today. Because one of her friends in preschool got her ears pierced. And her mother said not until she was five. And no, I can't wait until I'm five. And I heard this blow up. And then Chloe runs out of the bathroom into my office, which is next door, and jumps in my lap, and her lips go in, and the tears are coming. I'm like, what's the matter? And she said, Mommy said I can't get my ears pierced until I'm five. I'm like, so what's the matter? I can't wait until I'm five. And here are the questions. Is it true? You can't wait until you're five? She goes, yes, I can't wait. I said, is it absolutely true? She said, what do you mean? are you going to die if you don't get your ears pierced? And no lie, I thought she wouldn't roll her eyes at me until she was 12, rolled her eyes and said, of course not. And then the fourth question, and those who know the work of Byron Katie will know I stole it from her, is how does this thought, I can't wait until you're fine, make you feel sad, mad, and my ears are acute?
Oh.
And the fourth question is, well, how would you feel if you didn't have that thought? Peaceful is what she said. And then the fifth question is, let's take the original thought, I can't wait until I'm fine, and turn it to the opposite. She goes, what do you mean? I said, you know, we read a book on opposites recently, tall and small, fat and skinny. Oh, I can't wait until I'm fine. And then she just got off my lap and went to play with the dog.
Yeah.
And four.
Yeah.
And she can get this concept that you don't have to believe every stupid thing you think. And that's mental strength. It's clarity, it's consistency, and it's managing your mind.
And when you say consistency, what comes to my mind too, we do these exercises, let's say they're four, they're five, they're 12. But if they're watching mom and dad lose their shit when somebody cuts them off in traffic or when the water bottle falls down. I mean, this happened the other day where my husband's in a different room. He drops something and goes, God, come on. And my five-year-old is something somewhere else and a block falls down. And I hear her go, God, come on, you know? And so we as parents have to do exactly what you just said, walking through all of those depths so that we're doing it at the same time.
Well, and we talk about the rule of 12, which is one of my favorite rules. I think it online, it's got 10 million views or something. When my wife turned 50, I'm like, let's go to Paris. And so I took her to Paris. And I said, but let's do it differently this time. Let's just honor the bad things happen. And let's not be upset until the 12th thing goes wrong. And let's just count. And like four things got wrong and nobody got upset. Now, we moved into a new house last August and more than 12 things went wrong. And I'm like,
now I can be upset. I'm allowed to be upset.
Now we all
do. The more I can roll with things, the more mentally strong I am, but not roll over, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to tolerate people that are not competent, right? Because that happened. So I'm not rolling over, but I don't have to be upset because God gave me a big brain for a reason that I can solve problems. And I think the more you can solve problems rather than be held hostage by them. And I tell my patients all the time, and I think to myself all the time, argue with reality, welcome. And so I'm not a big fan of positive thinking. I'm a fan of accurate thinking with a positive spin. So if a flight gets canceled and I end up stranded in a place, I'm like, okay, well, way better to get canceled than to me to be on a flight, the windows pop out. Right? I think that's
true. So you can't control everything on the outside or other people's reaction or a plane getting canceled, but you can control your own reactions. And it has taken me 37 years to start practicing, by the way, because I can barely do it. But that is also the number one thing I want my kids to do. We get so, it's such a double standard, right? Where we're like, you be patient, don't get frustrated. We're teaching them all of these things and then we're not doing it ourselves.
And if you're not modeling it, what do you think they pick up?
That's why I'm doing it, right? I watched my mom get upset when the flight was canceled. I watched my mom be really heightened when it was Christmas morning. So now Christmas morning comes around and my body feels really heightened. You know, we got to...
Now it's this practice of noticing your thoughts, your feelings, not letting them be in the driver's seat. And it sounds like that changes your brain when you practice
these
things.
Absolutely does. Yeah. When you think on what's right, what's true, what's lovely, your brain works better than if you're predicting disaster.
Mm-hmm. Let's say you've been doing all of these things wrong for 37 plus years. Can you change your brain?
Absolutely. That's the exciting news. I do a show on Instagram called Scan My Brain. And one of my favorite stories is Troy Gloss. He was a third baseman for the Angels and the 2002 World Series MVP. So he's a cool dude. But when he's 45, he's drinking way too much. He's depressed. He has really dark thoughts. His memory's not good. And because of the alcohol, did you know there are 30 million children of alcoholics in the United States? 30 million.
That's a lot.
It's 10% of the population. Anyways, you could just see the family stress. And scanned him. His brain was terrible. But he just did everything I asked him to do, including not drinking. Supplementation, exercise, better diet. 2 months, lost 15 pounds, stopped drinking. His mood's so much better. I'm like, I want to see your brain. And I scanned him at 2 months. His brain's already better.
2 months.
And then I scanned him again at 16 months. Brain's better still. And I know if he keeps with the program, his brain is going to sort of grow younger. Well, how exciting is that?
Yeah, it's amazing.
You're not stuck with the brain you have. You can make it better. Now, one thing we haven't talked about yet is brain development. When you're young, your brain is undergoing wild development, and it sort of peaks in blood flow and activity around the age of 7. So little kids, lots of growth, lots of development. But then it starts to slow march down because there's something called pruning. If you don't use these parts of your brain, they tend to disconnect. And myelinization. And myelinization is really important. So when we're born, we don't have much myelin in our brain. But when we're 2 months old, the back of our brain myelinates. And think of myelinization as a copper wire. And it gets insulated with a white fatty substance called myelin. When a neuron is myelinated, it works 10 to 100 times faster. So it's becoming much more efficient. And so it starts about 2 months, the back of baby's brain is myelinated. And now when you smile at them, they smile back because they really see you. And then it's this very slow march from their occipital lobes in the back to their parietal lobes. Now they can start to play catch and ride a bike. And the prefrontal cortex, the front third of their brain, is not myelinated until they're 25. And so people who have teenagers, it's like you still need to feed them right. You still need to nudge them that marijuana is not innocuous and alcohol is not health food. Because if they damage this process, they may never really pick it back up.
Yeah. So the early years, where I thought you were going was before 7, it really matters. That was what I'm...
No, it really matters all the way...
The whole way to 25.
Yeah. I mean, it matters your whole life.
Of course.
Right.
Right.
You know, the insurance industry knew this before neuroscientists knew it. Right. Like, when do your insurance rates change from being outrageous to being reasonable? 25.
That's a good point.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is interesting.
Yeah.
Besties, you know that After Bedtime, this is a podcast where we navigate the wild world of parenting after our little ones have gone to sleep. But we can't forget our other little babies, our furry little troublemakers, our dogs. I have a little pug. His name is Moki, and we call him Momo, and he really is my number one baby. He was my first child. And at the same time, as much as we love our pets, we know they can get into some trouble sometimes. Let me tell you about a time that my sweet, sweet baby Moki got into a bit of trouble. My one-year-old was just learning how to do solids. He's practicing. I gave him a huge lamb bone. And the baby, being a baby, accidentally dropped it on the floor. And within seconds, I kid you not, I looked over. Before I could grab it, Moki inhaled the lamb bone all 6 inches in a pug down his throat. It was horrifying. We rushed him to an emergency vet, and thankfully, it was a 3-day journey. He is okay, but trust me, The vet bills, they were no joke. Speaking of which, we wanted to share a message from our partner Spot Pet Insurance, because Spot Pet Insurance plans can offer up to 90% cash back on eligible vet bills, which sounds like a game changer and something I wish I had on the Moki Lambone fiasco. Honestly, like, it was bad on top of bad when I got the bill. But now, imagine getting up to 90% cash back on that bill. And the Spot Pet Insurance plan offers not only coverage for accidents and illness plans, but an optional preventative care benefit as well to help with the cost for routine wellness, vaccines, and more. And if you catch yourself thinking like, is it expensive? Let me tell you, it is probably less expensive than the unexpected $1,800 vet bill that I got served. Go to spotpetinsurance.com today and get a free quote instantly. It's very easy. Disclaimer, paid ad for Spot Pet Insurance. Waiting periods, annual deductible, coinsurance, benefit limits, and exclusions may apply. For all terms, visit spotpetins.com/sample-policy. Insurance plans are underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by Spot Pet Insurance Services, LLC.
I feel like life is just picking up speed. Everything is going so fast. School pickup, work, gymnastics, all the activities, birthday parties. I need to feel my healthiest every single day. And that's why I decided to give AG1 a try. Not only does AG1 deliver my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, and pre and probiotics and more, but it's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel amazing. I am already managing so many schedules in my head. I cannot mix and match different pills and vitamins. This is why AG1 is a game changer. One scoop of AG1 takes just 60 seconds to mix up every morning and covers my nutrient gaps, promotes gut health, and supports my sustained energy. Plus, AG1 replaces my multivitamin, my pre and probiotic, my antioxidants, and my stress adaptogen. So I just have to remember one supplement instead of a bunch of pills every day. As a mom, I need a lot of support. I'm just admitting that now, 7 years in, and that includes nutrient support. I just noticed I was feeling groggy, depleted in all of my chaotic days. But AG1 covers my basis with high quality ingredients like pre and probiotics, stress adaptogens, antioxidants, and whole food sourced nutrients. I know if I drink it daily, I'm going to feel that extra boost. AG1 is a supplement I trust to provide the support my body needs daily, and that's why I'm excited to welcome them as a new partner. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/BLF. That's drinkag1.com/BLF. Check it out.
Another one of my favorite stories in the book is Chloe, who I'm picking on today. She's going to be a hellion. We used to say she's going to be the leader of a gang or the leader of the free world. And we weren't sure which, because she is so intense in her emotions. And her mother would stay, you know, sit with her to do her homework when she was in second grade for like hours. And Chloe would dawdle. And I looked at Tana and said, "You've done second grade." And three people recommended Parenting with Love and Logic for her, and she got it, and she really understood who the problem was, which was her.
Right.
And one day she announced to Chloe, "I've done second grade. I'm never going to ask you to do your homework again. It's on you. And if you're okay with the consequences of the teacher being mad at you, if you're okay with not going out at recess, if you're okay, if you really don't do your homework, of making new friends when you repeat second grade, that's on you." And I know a lot of parents are going to go, "Whoa, I could never do that. That's too harsh." Well, Chloe had a fit, stormed off, and 20 minutes later came back and did her homework. And no one ever asked her to do it again. Mm-hmm. And she's going to graduate from college, and she's just a superstar. She holds the anxiety. If she forgot her lunch, mm-hmm. nobody brought it to her. If she forgot her homework, nobody's bringing it to her. If it's cold out and she forgot her sweater,
really letting her experience her choices and what comes with it, the consequences. And at the same time, you also talk about not scaring our kids when it comes to discipline, because then that triggers certain parts of the brain where they're not able to learn. So it's a balance.
It's on you to do your homework.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not going to sit with you and fight with you about it. And too often, parents at 4 years old are worried about them getting into Harvard. And I'm not a fan of prestigious schools. You know, prestige is a French word. It's foundation is a French word meaning deceit. And, you know, I went to a community college and I did fine. Right? I've done pretty good, right? It's parents are looking into the future with fear and instilling low self-esteem, like, oh, I can't live up. Like I say in the book, never tell a child they're smart. Tell them they work hard. Praise them for working hard, because then if they come up against something hard, they'll work hard. And teach them to ask for help. It's always okay. And good parents, I think, are like good bosses. Good coaches. I've been blessed to see some of the world's best coaches. I did some work with the Miami Heat last year, and Eric Spoelstra is one of the best coaches in the NBA. I think he signed a $120 million contract or something insane. He's firm, right? If he says something, he means it. He's very kind, right? The coaches, you know, bad coaches notice what you do wrong and don't let you forget it. Bad parents notice what you do wrong and don't let you forget it.
Yeah.
And often you have to do your own work.
Because firm does not mean scaring people.
It doesn't mean
firm. Firm used to mean that, I think, when our parents were like, you have to be firm. You can't let them get away with anything. So I'm going to walk in here. I'm going to scream at you and say, what's wrong with you? And that's not it.
Yeah, but
firm can be loving and have connection at the same time.
Well, they actually did this study. We talk about in what kind of parent do you want to be. Are you loving or hostile? Are you firm or permissive? And that gives you four types of parents: loving and firm, loving and permissive, hostile and firm, hostile and permissive. And the worst one is hostile and permissive. The second worst one was loving and permissive. Permissiveness is bad for children. But let's not be hostile.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Because you want them to take good care of you when you're old.
You also want them to take good care of themselves. So it's really a win-win, you know?
And I'm always I'm always thinking way into the future. Like, I love my six children, but I never want to have to live with them. Which means I have to take care of myself. And by taking care of myself, I'm decreasing their stress.
Thank you for being on After Bedtime, Dr. Amen. This was really amazing, and we appreciate all your insight. This was phenomenal.
Yeah, this is great.
What a joy. Thank you for helping me spread the message.
Yeah.
If you are struggling with toddler or preschooler tantrums, pushback, discipline, picky eating, just all the confusing things, this podcast, we can only scratch the surface. If you need help, our course, Winning the Toddler Stage, is here to help. It is aptly nicknamed the Toddler Manual because it truly has every single thing you could possibly struggle with under the sun between the ages of 1 and 6 within one course. We're not going to do a bunch of workshops. You have to buy the sleep guide and the picky eating guide and the this guide and the that guide. No, everything you could possibly need for ages 1 through 6 is all in this one course. We were never meant to do this parenting thing alone. You deserve to have help. We are here for you. You can find that course at biglittlefeelings.com, and be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Big Little Feelings. We give free tips every single day. They might change your life with one free tip.
Thank you so much for being here with us. This has been an Odyssey production, executive produced by Lauren LaGrasso, produced by Daniela Silva, edited by Bob Tabador, and theme music composed by Liz Full. Then studio lighting designed by Shane Sackett and designed by Jackie Shearman. Special thanks to Odyssey Executive Vice President and Head of Podcasts, Jenna Weiss-Berman. And thank you for being here with us. We can't wait till next week.